everybody. Welcome to episode 631 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this is our new Comics Wednesday episode for Wednesday, December 12th, 2018. And it's late. There's so many great books. And that's why we're recording a little later than we would like to, because as you all know, I'm a little behind on a few episodes. I still have a few episodes that need to come out that should have been out already. And, you know, I was trying to get caught up on that this weekend and, you know, trying to read all these awesome books. So, and also I need to announce the details for the 12 days of the Comic Source that's coming up starting this Friday. So there's a lot to get to. So we're going to dive right in. Yeah. Heavy Batman week. So let's, what do you want to start with, Manny?
I'm going to start off with The Batman Who Laughs, number one. Written by Scott Snyder, with art by Jock, with David Baron. Hey, I didn't know he was doing colors on colors for the book. And this obviously is spinning off of the Dark Knight Metal. Dark Knight Metal event of last summer, and obviously the character comes from a universe where the Batman actually kills Joker, and his death results in him turning into a version of the Joker and Batman hybrid, who then goes on to cause havoc in other universes and starts taking out other Batmans, and then actually becomes the leader of the metal series that ended up with the other Nightmare Batman. And we all know how that ended up. So this one, obviously with this popularity, they decided to do a spinoff. We've already seen him in the Justice League book as a quote unquote prisoner of Lex Luthor. Although he has said many times that he could have got out anytime he wanted. So now he's back, and the first thing he wants to do is to kill the Joker, apparently. So, they go into Arkham, and the interesting thing about it is that he brings in another universe's Batman as well, but this one is like a, I guess you can call him a mixture of Batman and the Punisher. And they call him the Grim Knight. And apparently he was not featured in the Metal series because they thought that he would be too much compared to the other Batman. And so they kind of kept him away. And now he's in the Batman Who Laughs title, which is actually pretty cool. It's a pretty straightforward beginning, introduction to the characters, and then also just some Joker-esque mind games with Batman, with bringing in another dead Bruce Wayne in the beginning, and so it was an interesting title. Not as excited as I thought I'd be by the end of it. But definitely, my highlight of the book has to be the conversation that he had with Jim Gordon on the roof, and just talking about how he understands how powerful, how dangerous, this Batman Who Laughs is, just because of the combination of him being Batman and now with the Joker. And there was a line that says, you know, that he has his training, has his memories, and then he has the idea. And then Jim Gordon finishes the sentence, "Batman always wins." So how do you stop that? How do you stop a version of yourself now that crosses that line, but at the same time has that sense of that I am who I am, and I'm going to win at any cost now at this point. And so, it does make for an interesting, interesting story. Overall, it was pretty good, but, I think more than anything else, my problem with it is that as much as Joker has always been one of my favorite characters in the DC universe, I'm just a little jokered out, and I kind of wish that they would put their energy into another character. And yeah, then as for the artwork, it's pretty good. Jock art is always a little bit more on like the horror side. I know Snyder had worked with him on Witches, which I loved. So it's nice to see them work together again. And so, this is kind of more of a horror vibe anyway, with the Batman Who Laughs. So it fits the book pretty well. So, not my favorite of the week, but still pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it's kind of, I can totally relate to you about feeling jokered out. So what's funny is I wasn't excited for this title at all. I'm not a fan of the Batman Who Laughs. I mean, the idea of a Joker Batman mashup, you know, because I don't really like the Joker, so it's kind of like, I'm lukewarm about it. And then when you put in his visual, like, I can't stand the way he looks with the spike band around his eyes. It makes no sense to me. How does he see? It's just ridiculous. All that being said, this first issue actually surprised me with how much I enjoyed it. But you know what? What's funny is the Joker Who Laughs is hardly in it at all, and I think that's what I enjoyed about it. There's a twist ending that I didn't see coming that I love. And the Grim Knight I found interesting. So the only other thing that I'll add, well, a couple things. As far as the Grim Knight goes, Snyder at San Diego Comic-Con basically said he had this idea for a Batman who was kind of like, Batman Punisher. Like, what if at that moment after his parents were killed, young Bruce Wayne picked up Joe Chill's gun? You know, like he shoots his parents, drops the gun. Young Bruce Wayne picks it up, kills Joe Chill. And at that moment, I love guns, right? Like it enabled him to immediately have vengeance. So from that point on, he's Batman with guns. So that's just, that's pretty awesome. And then the other thing, like the whole reason that the series even exists, because I think there was some, I think Scott was misquoted a little bit, because I saw some people saying that he didn't get to work with Batman Who Laughs. He felt like he didn't get to work with him enough in Metal. So that's why he wanted to do the series, so he'd get a chance to write the character a lot more. And that's not what he said. He said he didn't get a chance to write Batman versus Batman Who Laughs. Like, that's what he wants to focus on. Like, our Batman, the Batman of the main DC universe, matching wills and matching wits with the Batman Who Laughs. That's what he did. He didn't get to have him go one-on-one, so to speak, because Metal was a big series, with a lot of characters and, big scope. And so he didn't get a chance to do that. So that's what this is. So yeah, I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected to. I'll put it that way. So, all right, on to my first book. Let's see what I'm going to talk about first here. You know what? Let's stick with Batman. I'll go Batman Damned, from Brian Azzarello with art by Lee Bermejo and letters by Jared K. Fletcher. So this is the Black Label book, of which the first drummed up all kinds of controversy. And this one was a little late. I guess they made it a little more tame in a way. I think maybe there had been some nudity, because there's a scene where Harley Quinn, this version of Harley Quinn, kind of opens her shirt. You don't see anything, but I could easily see that in the past that she had. For me, where this book shines is artwork. This is some of the best artwork of Lee Bermejo's career, if not the best. Like, stunningly good. Like, the detail he puts into, especially the cityscapes, the emotion in the faces, Batman's costume, the fact that Sting looks just like, or John Constantine rather, looks just like Sting. Like, it all works perfectly. He sets the tone and the mood wonderfully. The flashback scenes when Bruce is a kid, kind of evoke that nostalgia in a certain time period. The story itself, there's aspects I like. Like, I like the fact that it feels so nihilistic. Azzarello, his ideas can get pretty out there. And he's not interested in writing really just Batman for the sake of Batman, Batman being Batman, the superhero. He wants to examine him. He wants to kind of break him down. And I'm okay with that to some extent. Where the story falls down a little bit for me is when he flashes back to Thomas and Martha Wayne's relationship and the way Bruce sees it. You know, not that it has to be totally idealized, like it's been kind of written in the past, but I mean, he's Azzarello's making it like a very bad marriage in a way, like that, you know, there's infidelity and there's like almost verbal abuse and stuff. And so, yeah, it kind of, I mean, it's fine. It's a different version and everything, but you know, if I have a choice of reading that or not, you know, not having it exist that way, then I prefer the not. I'm a big fan of Thomas Wayne. It's, Jeff Johns brought him back in Flashpoint, and you know, I like that character, and so it's kind of disparaging him in a way, and I don't know, it just doesn't really feel in character. But it's a small nitpick, because overall the story is interesting. Clearly there's a lot going on that we don't understand. There's only one issue left, so how it all gets wrapped up is going to be interesting as well. I like the way Harley was kind of disguised as the Joker in this issue. And yeah, just overall, gorgeous artwork, interesting story. And yeah, I mean, I imagine this may get some more sales than it otherwise would have because of all the publicity from the first issue and what went on there. So if that's the case, then, you know, I hope people are actually reading it instead of just buying it, you know, from a purely speculative standpoint. Because, like I said, where this book shines is Bermejo's art. Like, I don't even need the words. I don't even need the story. I could just look at the art and I would be happy, and I can just kind of make up my own story in my head. That's how amazing the artwork is. So Batman Dam 2, definitely pick it up. What do you have up next, Manny?
I just want to say that second cover that he has with Harley is one of my favorite covers, if not my favorite cover of this year. It kind of has like a Dia de los Muertos vibe to it. And then, also then it was also good to then see the reason why he has the green hair in the book. And it was, that part was just, it was done so well. It was just almost like that scene that you're talking about where she opens up, her costume. It's like really disturbing to a point. Yeah. I'm like, what the hell happened to her?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that artwork, that it's some of the best I've ever seen. Just like, I think there was a couple of pages where I think I forgot even to read, or I got lost in the art and I was like, stop reading. So so it took me a while to get through this book, but yeah, anyway,
yeah, I think
really, really good book.
Yeah. I mean, the facial expressions, like when Batman goes to punch her and she just has that sad look on her face and the tears coming out of her eye, it's just like, man, Lee, you're killing it. And the thing I'll say about the cover, I got a very, I got a Rocky Horror Picture Show vibe from it big time.
So. Oh yeah, a little bit. Yeah. It's done really, really well.
Yep. Definitely.
Anyway, I'm going to break it up a little bit, because the last thing I want to do is go on to another Bat book.
We have two more that are really good. Amazing.
I can't wait to get the annual, but let's break it up. I'm going to go over to an Image book that I really enjoyed, and that is Bitterroot number 2. And that's written by David F. Walker, with artwork by Chuck Brown and Stamford Green. And it's colored by Rico Renzi and also Stamford Green. This one in particular was dedicated to Stan Lee, the second issue, so that's pretty cool. So the premise of this book, in case you haven't been reading it, because it doesn't necessarily scream Pick Me Up on the stands, is, we're talking about the 40s. I'm sorry, 1924. So, I mean, not the 40s. So really early age, and it talks about this evil that's been always plaguing humanity. So if your heart or if your soul's not pure, then it can be corrupted. It can be used as a corrupted soul. You can be turned into something that's called a genu, which is a human that is consumed by hate, infected by evil, and then you're transformed into like a monster, like a creature, and you obviously wreak havoc wherever you go. But there's a family, the Sangers, that have been tasked to fight them, and to not only fight them, but also get these people back to their regular lives. Because one thing you learn really quick is that they understand that these monsters are also people. So they're not just trying to destroy. All they're trying to do is destroy that evil, destroy that hate, to restore those people back to their innocence. And this is actually really apparent, because in the last issue, we see one of the Sangers. His name's Fred. Ford. He takes out a group of white supremacists, and it turns out that all of them are Geno, are monsters, except for one, who was this young man who apparently had just joined the clan, and so he doesn't understand why he didn't transform, or why he wasn't a Geno, why he didn't he wasn't a monster. And so when he explains to Ford that he just joined, that he didn't even know that they were going to hang this young man or anything, he tells him, well, that's why you didn't transform, because you're still pure, you're still good hearted, so stay that way and you won't ever have to be like any of these people. He has a different, Ford has stepped away from his family, who has a different approach, who they capture them, and then, like I said, they transform back into people. But there's also, there's a Dr. Sylvester, who is actually looking to unleash these creatures on Earth. And some of the other family members, Colin, Borg, and Blink, come face to face with another creature who ends up being more powerful than a genie. It turns out it's not a genie, and it's another character from the book, which was a good twist to it. Not going to say who or what. And then also, it's a really interesting book. It's an interesting take. It's actually a pretty simple, concept, but it just seems to be, have pretty deep roots. They have almost futuristic looking weapons, kind of like almost like steampunk weapons that they mix with different roots and different, serums that their mom or grandma makes. Ma Eda, that's her name. And they use these to purify these creatures and turn them back. So it's a really interesting story. It's one that, I'll continue to follow. I like the artwork. It has really good expressions. I'm not too fond of the colors. They're really muted, but we'll see how far it goes. It almost feels like this is the kind of story that I want to read through though, all at once, and not issue by issue. So, but for now, I do recommend that you pick up issue 1 and 2, see if you like it. And, they're good. Bitterroot number 2.
Yeah. I think, in a way it's a lot of the stories are analog for civil rights and, you know, equality among minorities, especially African Americans. You can kind of look at it as, you know, it's kind of, I mean, it's not too much of a stretch, but I almost, you know, like you talked about the Klan and these, you know, white people that were turned into monsters, and they're kind of, they kind of blame the, you know, the Sanger family and their, ancestors, supposedly it's kind of their fault, and they know about this kind of evil that gets unleashed and everything, and you can kind of look at it as people saying or think of it as the idea that, yeah, so these you know, African Americans came over and in a way the way that the you know, the white people reacted to them was very monstrous, so you can look at it as an analog as far as that goes. And then with the, you know, the roots and the herbs and everything they make in serums, it's like things that are very effective against these monsters, but that nobody would ever really give them credit for, you know? And there were a lot of African Americans, you know, George Washington Carver, you know, guys like that who did come up with inventions and ideas and, you know, created things that, that they didn't get really get the credit that they probably deserved for them. So you can look at it that way as well. And David Walker, one of the writers, is he writes a lot of history books also. He does, like, he just had one come out. I can't remember who it was about. Frederick Douglass, maybe? That doesn't sound right, but somebody like that, a black historical figure that he just had a book come out about. And so I know it's kind of right in his wheelhouse. So big fan of his work. He's an excellent writer, very talented. So it's definitely worth picking up for sure. Let's see. Next book I'm going to talk about, you know what? Let me talk about Electric Warriors number 2 from Steve Orlando with art by Travel Foreman. And the colors are by Hi-Fi. Letters are by Travis Lanham. And I said before when I was talking about the first issue how impressed I was with the artwork. Travel Foreman's art has always been really sketchy, in my opinion, and this is a different style. Like, the first time I saw Foreman's art was probably on the New 52 Animal Man, and yeah, it was nowhere near as slick or as sleek as it is here, and I'm really impressed with the art because this is set in the future of the DC universe, at least one possible future, and so kind of the slick style of art that he's using, and the very almost computerized or digital looking coloring that Hi-Fi is using really helps to kind of give it that futuristic feel. And basically the premise of the story is in the future, instead of going to war, planets instead have champions that fight on their behalf. So for instance, in this book, we have the champion of Earth and the champion of Saturn that fight over the grain reserves that Earth has. And whoever wins, you know, gets the rights to those grain reserves rather than Saturn coming in, invading Earth and causing all kinds of, you know, death and destruction. And maybe the grain even gets destroyed and then nobody benefits. So it's an interesting concept. And the other cool thing about what Orlando's doing is he's weaving a lot of other characters and alien races and things that we've seen before, like the Dominators and the Kundians and the Gildishpan, all those different alien races we've seen a lot of times in the Legion of Superheroes, actually, is where we've seen a lot of them. So it's a really great book. It's hard for me to talk about it without spoiling it because it is kind of new and interesting concepts. So I can't really like say too much without spoiling, but it's definitely worth picking up. It's a 6-issue mini, so you're not like on the hook for a lot, but it is a really great story. And there's at the end of last issue, we had a surprise character show up that I didn't expect to see, which was really cool. And I still don't want to say who it is, even though that book, you know, came out last month, because he didn't have a real big role in this. We did see him, but we didn't have a real big role in the second issue. So I kind of want to hold that info back, but it's definitely worth picking up. Anything Steve Orlando writes, in my opinion, is worth picking up. He has a good flair for dialogue, and his books really shine in the relationships and the way he starts to establish relationships between characters. And that's kind of a subplot in this story too, how even though the Electric Warriors are ultimately destined to fight against each other for various reasons, you know, there's like a code of honor among them, almost like gladiators, right? And you can tell they're not real happy that, you know, they understand they're saving lives and it's an honor to be an Electric Warrior, but there's a code, there's mutual respect. And in a way, you could almost see them like forming a rebellion to overthrow and say, no, this isn't the way to solve the disputes either. You know, maybe it's not thousands of people dying because these planets are going to war, but maybe the answer is not to solve these disputes or disagreements with violence at all, like find a, you know, a peaceful solution that doesn't involve anyone having to fight. So it's definitely an interesting book, and I do recommend picking it up. All right, what do you have up next, Manny?
Up next, I have had it. Oh, Goddess Mode number one. That's a Vertigo title by Zoe Quinn, with art by Robbie Rodriguez and colors by Rico Renzi. Let me just start off by saying that there is a variant cover to this book by Steven Sajic that is awesome. I found it that it told me a lot more about the book than the other cover. So I really like it. It was a little strange because it kind of just puts you right into the story. And if you haven't read a preview, if you haven't really, you know, followed it, beforehand, as in, you know, your previous book or whatever, it's kind of hard to get into because you really have to try and figure out the world. You kind of have to, for lack of a better term, learn on the job and figure out what's going on in the world that you're living in, because it's a futuristic world where the needs of people are provided by a godlike AI that was created. And one of the creators is the father of a girl named Cassandra, whose job is she's like tech support for it. Her father, who's one of the founders, is actually like in a, like almost like an Anora freeze, like, stasis, until they find a cure for a disease that he has. And, in kind of snooping around, like she usually does, she finds she discovers a hidden digital world within that AI, where a group of superpowered women are trying to break free into reality and to turn it on its head. And so that's pretty much the premise of the first issue there's just a lot going on. I mean, this just book has tons of dialogue, and it took a bit of an acquired taste. I am kind of on the hook. I want to see where it goes, but it's a little much for me for a first issue. I wish they kind of would have explained a little bit more of what's going on. With that said, I love the artwork in the book. So with that, it made it a little bit more enjoyable. But then, like I said, there's so much going on. The whole problem starts when the system malfunctions for a few minutes, and everybody kind of panics, but they fix it. And it turns out she was not necessarily involved, but she's in the wrong place at the wrong time, digitally. And so, and in snooping, she discovers that other digital world. More than anything, the colors in that book are really beautiful. And, now that I understand what's going on, understand the premise, like I want to keep reading it, but I'm telling you, it was a little tough to get into at first because I had no idea even what universe I was in.
Yeah, I would say I didn't really have a tough time getting into it. Maybe it's because I pretty much live in the world of technology with my day job. But where it got kind of weird for me is when at the end, when the main character kind of goes into the digital world, the world within a world, herself. And that world, it's almost like I would compare it to like Alice in Wonderland, right? She really like falls down the rabbit hole, and it's a digital world, but it's like a fantasy world. You know, they talk about magic and, you know, using their powers and stuff. And so it was like, wait, what? I was following it until that, and then it got weird right at the end for me. So, but yeah, I'm definitely in for another issue. You're right. The colors and the art are really good. And, the main character, did it say what her name was?
Yeah, Cassandra.
Yeah, that's right, Cassandra. I really like her. She's kind of a no nonsense kind of person. You know, she realizes that the world they live in, although for a lot of people seems like great with, you know, so much technology that makes life easy. She sees it for what it is, which is kind of like lipstick on a pig, so to speak. Right. So I like that. She's an interesting character. All right. Let's see. What do I have up next here? Go over my list. What is this? Oh, that's that one we just talked about. Oh, okay. Hardcore number one. It's the image book from Skybound. It's Hardcore. The concept is created by Robert Kirkman and Mark Silvestri. And the story is from Kirkman and Andy Diggle. Who's done such a great job on Shadowman recently. Diggle did the script. We have Alessandro Vitti as the artist, Adriana Lucas handling the colors, and Thomas Maurer on letters. And just to give you a quick rundown on kind of the concept of Hardcore, which is really kind of cool. So the U.S. government has this program, definitely off the books, definitely black bag, where when they need to undertake like the most secretive missions for something that threatens the U.S., a place where they can't get into very easily at all, for various reasons, like, you know, the unreachable, I don't know, Osama bin Ladens of the world or that kind of thing. What they do is they find somebody who's close to that person, and they send in what's called a tag team, which is kind of like a sniper team. There's a spotter and a sniper, but instead of firing a bullet, it fires this little piece of technology that biodegrades after 72 hours. And what that little piece of technology, they'll shoot somebody in the neck, like usually, you know, right in the back of the neck. And what that technology does is it allows the main character in the book to basically take over their body. He like jacks in. And he basically just takes over the body. And then, you know, it's a trusted person, right, that can get into wherever they need to go. And then he's able to assassinate whoever he needs to assassinate, or, you know, do whatever kind of mission he needs to do. You know, there are some limitations. At the beginning, we see that he's jacked into this guy who's really fat, and he's trying to complete a mission, and it's just tough because he doesn't exist. You know, the guy's not exactly physically fit, and it makes it pretty tough to complete the mission. But it's a really interesting concept. And so what happens is, and for his part, he's technically, or, you know, if you went to look up his military jacket, it would say that he's a drone pilot. And that's kind of the way he looks at it. These are just kind of meat drones, so to speak. So he's just like, if it wasn't me, it would be somebody else. And it's just a really, really interesting concept. So the antagonist in the book is the guy who apparently created the system, and he wasn't psychologically fit to actually pilot anything in the Hardcore program, and he kind of carries a grudge. So I don't want to give away what he does or what happens, because it's kind of the main premise. But if I talk about issue 2, I'd probably be able to discuss that a little more, but I don't want to ruin it for those that haven't read it. So the art's pretty visceral. From Alessandro Vitti, and it suits the book pretty well. Where it kind of brightens up, and where you get the idea that it's a little bit futuristic, as in the color work by Lucas. It's relatively bright, which gives that sense of like a world where with advanced technology and where things are clean and that whole kind of aspect and tone. So Overall, I was really impressed. It was one of those books that's like really fun to read. They have cool military terms, like the little the capsule, the hardcore capsule where he goes to jack in and he's connected in all these different spots. Is called the pressure cooker, and they called the human drones meat puppets. And yeah, so it feels pretty realistic in terms of, if this really existed, this would probably be exactly as they, exactly as they would be doing it, so to speak. And I think Andy Diggle's just a great writer. I think he's really underrated between what he's been doing with Shadow Man and this first issue. Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I definitely would recommend it. Plus, I should also say that the main cover is by Dan Panosian. And it's a really great looking cover. Dan's been doing a lot of covers lately, and this is probably my favorite of the recent ones that he's done. So yeah, it's a great start, and there's a twist at the end that where things really hit the fan. And it's like Agent Drake, the main guy, the guy that's able to jack in, he's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. It's going to be interesting to see how he gets out of this. So definitely recommend Hardcore number one. Really, really good. All right. What do you have up next, Manny?
I have DC's Justice League Dark number 6. And that is written by James Tynion IV, penciled by Daniel Sampier, with inks by Juan Albarn and colors by Adriano Lucas, with the cover by Nicola Scott and Romulo Fajardo Jr. And then Clayton Crane did a variant cover on it, which is pretty cool. It's an interesting swap thing. Anyway, this is the second part of the Shadow Pact, and it takes place mostly in the mystical realm of Mira. And Detective Chimp, don't screw it up. I guess when his buddy Jim Rook had died, and he passed on his sword to him, kind of made Detective Chimp the Nightmaster. And that didn't go so well. And everyone's trying to figure out why. Why are these undead coming back time after time after time and attacking, and they just can't figure it out? Detective Chimp has been imprisoned. And then also Blue Demon's trying to take his hold this place. Along with some of the other Justice League members, Diana goes over to talk to him to get some answers from Bobo. And I mean, I didn't expect to have that much of a heart to heart with that character. Part of it, we know that it's the way Wonder Woman operates. That's part of her powers, is what she's able to bring out in people. We've seen that in the films, and we've seen that in comics time and time again. That's just what she does. And we get the opportunity to learn a lot about what Detective Chimp did, but not only what he did, but why he did it. I found it really interesting that, I mean, we get so much about his character. He didn't want the responsibility of being the Nightmaster. As a matter of fact, he found it overwhelming, and he wanted Jim to come back. So in doing so, he accidentally unleashed all these undead because he messed with forces that he should have never messed with in the beginning. And I find it really, really interesting. I mean, it just kind of send me back a little bit just to think about his character. It, you know, he says that he's not a hero and that he never was going to be. And then he talks about his, you know, his origin. He says, I drank that pond water and the universe gave me life, gave me knowledge. Everything I've drunk since then is just me trying to desperately give it all back. I found that quite interesting just to think about, you know, he got so smart that he doesn't want it anymore. He realizes things about the universe, whatever, that he just wants to go back being a chimp, pretty much. I found that really, really interesting. But with the help of Wonder Woman, with her reasoning, she's able to convince him to help out and figure out a way to hopefully take back all, to fix the issue that Zatanna and Dan or the Blue Demon and some of the others are trying to hold off. And in the meantime, you have a one-on-one with Dr. Fate and the Phantom Stranger. Does not go well, the Phantom Stranger, and you have John Constantine and Swamp Thing on the sideline, trying to figure out what's going on and how to stop it. I mean, so don't want to get too much more away about the issue. It was a really, really good issue. I mean, with all the mystical stuff going on, with the magic, with all the different characters, never thought that there would be so much depth in this book. Then there's an undertone of relationship between Constantine and Zatanna. Now there's this whole detective chimp thing. And then there's also just a lot going on. But it's done in a way that it's not overwhelming, and I find Mad Bat to be quite funny at times, just because of how excited he is to be part of the team that deals with sorcery. So I mean, just overall, really love this book this week. Love the artwork and the colors of it, and just overall, just a really, really solid book. And Justice League Dark has been where it's at so far.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, normally Alvaro Martinez Bueno does the art. And this one with Daniel Sampier, I thought his art style is similar to Bueno, but a little more detailed, a little more tight. And I really, really enjoyed it. I also, the other thing is I really like the kind of the new design of Blue Devil. He's not quite so cartoony as it used to be back in the day. He looks a little more menacing, and I like that as well. So yeah, Justice League Dark, like you said, it's definitely been where it's at. Really, really great book. That fight with Phantom Stranger and Dr. Fate was brutal. Turning Dr. Fate into a bad guy almost is kind of, I like Dr. Fate. I hate to see him go that way, but
Jay saves everybody all the time. Now it's just,
yep, he's had enough.
I really like the moment when when Constantine tells Swamp Thing to trust him. And Swamp Thing's like, "You lied to me to get me here. What do you want me to do?"
Yeah, their relationship's great. So, all right. Well, let's see. The next book I'm going to talk about is Skyward, issue number. What are we on here? Number 9, I think. Yep, number 9, and it's from writer Joe Henderson with art and cover by Lee Garbett, colors by Antonio Fabella, and letters by Simon Boland. And this is Here Be Dragonflies Part 4. And for those that haven't been following along with Skyward or haven't been listening to the podcast and heard me talk about it before, it's basically a world where gravity is 10% of what it used to be. So right off the bat, it's a really interesting premise, and Lee Garbett gets to draw a world that is different than any world that he's ever drawn before. And it can be challenging at times. You've got to make sure that, you know, you never have things like sitting on a flat surface, because they wouldn't. They'd float away. So in the second arc, the main character, Willa, at the end of the first arc, she tragically lost her father, and now she's out to try to, quote-unquote, save the world. Her father kind of saw this catastrophe coming in a way, with gravity disappearing, and when it happened on that day, G-Day as it's known, Willa's mom died on that day along with, you know, hundreds of thousands of others. And ever since that day, her father's been agoraphobic, basically scared to go outside, thinks the world is too dangerous that way. But Willa has discovered that perhaps her father has a way to turn the world back to the way that it used to be and make it less dangerous in a way. But what's interesting is, you know, this is the only world that Willa's ever known. She's grown up and she has joy in the ability to fly and do all this kind of stuff. But throughout the course of the first arc, she's kind of discovered that there is danger there as well. And maybe it would be better if things did go back to the way they used to be. So she's on a journey to perhaps do that. It seemed like she for sure was going to do that. And this issue, more so than any other issue in the series, the book starts to get really political. We've got different factions that we start to learn their motivations, and we start to learn like why they're doing what they're doing and why they might want to align themselves with Willa to bring gravity back to the world. And then we have people that Willa should probably trust, or that she does trust, that may not want gravity to come back for various reasons. So all of a sudden, we're starting to drill down into ideas like who should make the decision on something like this, right? Like some people are better off, like people that are confined to wheelchairs and things. They have much more freedom in this world, and you're condemning them back to a world where it's much harder for them to get around. But there's all these factors, right? So you start thinking about good of the many versus good of the few and all those kind of ideas. And ultimately, it seems like this issue really sets up some tough choices for Willa going forward. And at the end of the day, she's a, you know, early 20-something kid. And should she be the one making the decision for, you know, billions of people on Earth? So it's really interesting. When you stop to think about it, when I started reading this book, I had no idea that Joe Henderson, the writer, was going to go in this direction, right? The book started off so kind of lighthearted in a way, and it's gotten a little more complicated after the end of the first arc. And then at the end of this story, it's almost like now we've shifted into a whole nother gear. And so the book is evolving right before my eyes and turning into a book where it gives a lot of food for thought, which it was always entertaining. And now it's like, okay, added value from Joe Henderson, because he's making me question everything that I thought I knew about this world and the characters and their motivations. So it's been a very, very good book so far. I think that Joe and Lee and the rest of the creative team are doing a great job. And I think they've heard from a lot of fans who've read it, who are really, really enjoying it. Pretty much everybody who reads it seems to really like it. I just think they need more people reading it at the end of the day, so it can continue to come out on a monthly basis. So it's a great book. I really recommend it. And yeah, the artwork by Lee Garbett. He's a very underrated artist. I love his sense of storytelling. He uses pretty traditional panel layouts, but he'll throw insets in there once in a while. A lot of time his insets will be like close-ups on faces to really show emotion. So I like that about his art. And also it's really fun art, because he gets to do things like when they're drinking wine, it's little droplets that are floating around, you know, just like it would be in space with low gravity. So that's really cool. And then the colors by Antonio Fabella are excellent as well. He really kind of darkened the palette a little bit in the second arc, which suits the story that's being told, because things have gotten a little more serious in the second arc with, Willa's father having been killed, and her kind of having to grow up a little bit, as opposed to the first arc where everything was kind of bright and sunny, and you know, she was a little more carefree. So the colors are really kind of setting the tone here and letting us know that the book's taken a little bit more of a serious slant, so to speak. So, all right, Manny, what do you have up next?
My last book I'm going to talk about, because I'm not, I don't know how awake I am, is the Batman Annual number 3. And that one's written by Tom Taylor with artwork by Otto Schmidt and covers by Brian Hitch and Alex Sinclair. This book, Jace, I don't know how you feel about it, but it is my book of the week. Tom Taylor does an amazing job at looking into the life of Alfred Pennyworth. I mean, it goes as far back as, you know, the day that Bruce's parents died, and the phone call, and how important a phone call is to Alfred Pennyworth. And it started off with that one phone call, and then every call after that. I mean, he talks about his plans he had for his life and how he had other ideas, but that night changed his life forever, just like Bruce's life had changed as well. He just watched over him from time to time again. And what I love about it is that every few panels or so, he gives his witty Alfred comments. For example, he calls him. He says, "Alfred, are you there?" He says, "Yep, right here, sir." Were you asleep? He goes, "It's 3 a.m., Master Bruce. Why would I be asleep?" Or later, he talks about the mint on his pillow. He tells Bruce, "Hey, I put a mint on your pillow, and I noticed that the next day I came in to make your bed, and it was still there because you didn't sleep in your bed. I just want to let you know that I ate it, but I ate it out of protest because you didn't sleep in your bed." And so, you get a chance to look. And you get it from his point of view of why he does what he does and how he does it. And at the same time, you get this, you know, quick Batman story where he's taking on a character that calls himself the Drone. And with Batman coming in and out and what Alfred does and what Bruce means to him. And then their constant communication that they have to one another. And then kind of the climax of it is when he goes face to face with the Drone and Batman gets stabbed. Alfred has, like he has many occasions that we've seen in other books and even in the movies, Alfred actually has to go out and get Batman out of his situation. Just overall, very, very well done. I really don't want to give out any more about it, because the ending was just, that was great. It was sweet. It was, you know, the conversation he has with Leslie Tompkins also, there's a lot in there too. And just a fantastic book. I mean, it just made me just smile and just kind of, I you know, enjoy that relationship between Alfred and Batman. So, great book.
Yeah, I agree. It was really, really good. I read it and especially the last couple pages really kind of brought a smile to my face. So, definitely worth picking up. Tom Taylor, I would definitely read a Tom Taylor Batman series. Something about having the first name Tom and writing Batman apparently means you do a really good job. So yeah, excellent. And Otto Schmidt, I mean, I've been a fan of his ever since I saw his work on Green Arrow. So I thought he did a great job as well. All right, on to my last book. And this was one where kind of similar to the Batman title we just talked about. When I got done reading it, I was just smiling ear to ear, and I was like, yes, so good. It's Hawkman number 7 from writer Robert Venditti. We have Brian Hitch handling the pencils. We have Hitch and Andrew Curry doing the inks, and Jeremiah Skipper on colors. And let me just say, for a character that's been around for like, I don't know, like 70 years or so, 75 years, like a really, really long time, we've never had an origin like this for Hawkman. We've seen recently that Venditti has done something that no writer's ever been able to do before, and it's kind of he's kind of been able to make sense of Hawkman as a character in terms of, you know, there's been so many different iterations of Hawkman over the years. You know, different writers come in and give their spin, and then you're left wondering, well, wait, if I believe this writer's story, then that means that this other story can't exist, right? They're kind of like mutually exclusive. So, you know, is he Thanagarian or is he an archaeologist from Earth? Like, you know, which one is true? Which one makes sense? Which one works? Venditti's managed to do a really good job of making them all work together better than any previous writer has done by coming up with the idea that Hawkman is not only reincarnating through time, but he's also reincarnating across space, right? So if he dies in one iteration, you know, say he's a Thanagarian policeman and he dies, then he can be reborn as a prince in Egypt, right? So it makes sense. It's a way to put it all together. And now we're going back to the very beginnings of Hawkman before we even knew that he existed. He's one of the oldest characters of the DC universe all of a sudden, which is a really great idea. And not only that, and again, I don't want to spoil it because you must go out and buy this book and read it. He gives us an idea of, okay, so who was this man before he became Hawkman? And what are his motivations for being Hawkman? Because ultimately it was a choice to choose immortality and this concept of reincarnating over time and space and the motivations and the reasons that he does it. And there's one other little kind of aspect to his reincarnation, which is so amazing, which is I really, really liked, which was just great, just completely karmic and cosmic balance kind of things, all mixed in one. And it was just, it's one of those things, like, again, you think about a character that's been around as long as Hawkman, and it's so hard to bring something new and exciting to a character like that. And especially the, you know, the extra challenge with Hawkman, with his continuity being like all screwed up. And I mean, I just, like, amazing job by Robert Venditti and Brian Hitch to come up with this idea of the reincarnating across time and space, and, you know, this idea for the origin. It's just, it makes so much sense that you kind of have to wonder, like, okay, why didn't anybody think of this before? And it's just, it's perfect. A character that's been around as long as Hawkman. I mean, when the editorial staff at DC heard Robert pitched this stuff, they had to just be like, yeah, like, they're buying it in the room, right? They're like, yes, yeah, 100%. This is it. We want you to write this story. We want you to tell the story, because this should be a new foundation for Hawkman going forward. Every writer can go back and with the fact that he's been reincarnating over time and space, it opens up any possibility for any writer to come in and tell any kind of story, because you can make it fit. Right. It's just another one of the lives that he's led. It just opens up to so many different ideas. And yeah, it's something really special. And Robert should be really proud. As far as the artwork from Hitch, you know, Hitch is very cinematic in his layouts, in his storytelling, a lot of wide panels. This is no different. The one thing I will say that it's different about this issue is the page layouts are a little different. And I really like it. I feel like it suits the story that he's telling here. And he's basically taking pages, sometimes two pages, and there's not really any borders. A lot of times it's going from, you know, one edge of the page to the other with maybe just some really thin gutters to break up the panels. And those gutters are not horizontal or vertical. You know, they're often at angles, and it really makes it interesting to look at, very pleasing to the eye. And it suits kind of the feel of the book with, you know, Hawkman in flight and soaring. And, you know, you get a lot of the gutters that are kind of leaning forward, and gives a sense of movement. The colors by Jeremiah Skipper are also done really well. A lot of this book is sort of this particular issue, I should say, is kind of set in space. So there's a lot of blue tones, almost a blue filter on a lot of the pages, which helps to give it that that feeling of being in space. So it's my book of the week. If you're only going to pick up one title or one issue, you got to pick up Hawkman. I love that Batman Annual. It was close. I read that Batman Annual first, and I thought, same as Manny, that, yep, all right, that's my book of the week. And then I read Hawkman, and I have to give it the nod just for the fact that Venditti and Hitch are adding something to Hawkman that should be there forever, for the rest of the time that the character exists. And again, for a character that's been around as long as Hawkman, to be able to do that, that's something really and truly special. So I had to give it my nod for book of the week. The other thing I'll say, Manny, I thought you were going to talk about Detective also. I thought that was a really good issue this week.
Yeah, I was. I kind of forgot.
All right. Well, I'll just mention really quickly, this is Peter Tomasi's first issue on the Countdown to 1000. Pencils by Doug Monkey, inks by Jaime Mendoza, colors by David Barron, letters by Rob Lee. And it was really cool. I'm not, it really tied in, you know, kind of like the annual, with the annual tying in so much to the death of Bruce's parents and anniversaries and family and everything. This kind of did the same. There's a big murder mystery right at the start. I don't want to spoil any more than that, but I thought the Doug Monkey art was excellent. I'm not too sure about the villain that we see. First of all, I'm not sure who it is, really. And I'm also not sure, like, there's kind of some hints that it may be Joker. It may be tied into Joker in some way. And like Manny and I both said, man, we're jokered out. Please, Tomasi, please don't have it be the Joker. Please have it be something more interesting than that. But I guess we'll wait and see. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I really wanted Brian Edward Hill to stay on the book. I thought the James Robinson arc was okay. The Two-Face story was okay, maybe slightly below average.
I like the Two-Face story.
But, well, I mean, if I have to choose between that and the Brian Edward Hill story, I'll take the Brian Edward Hill story.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's okay.
Yeah. And I don't know. I just thought the Robinson story was just okay. This, in my mind, elevates the title back up as one of the better titles that DC's putting out.
And we not even include the Joker, I'll tell you that. I'm just,
yeah.
That's the last thing I need, is another book with the Joker in it.
Yeah. And we are on the Countdown to 1000. So that's, that should be exciting as well. So, all right. Is there anything else you want to add about Detective?
Other than that, the art was really great. just really good artwork. Really cryptic way to get Batman's attention, I'll tell you that. It had a really good detective feel to it, I'll say that. Like, it was more about the mystery than the action, but then the action did get good towards the middle and end. So, you're right. It's a good detective issue that we should talk about. But I'm really, really curious for the next issue, because I want to get, hopefully I'll get one or two answers about what the heck's going on here. Because it's a weird MO to have that kind of big, almost brimstone looking creature randomly attack. So we'll see what's up. But yeah, good issue.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let me give a rundown on some of the other titles. I mean, like I said, I must have read like 15 books this week getting ready, and we'll be covering, you know, some of them on various other podcasts and such. So from Aftershock, We had a couple of titles come out. We had Dead Kings number 2 from Steve Orlando that came out. That really expanded the world that Steve Orlando is telling there. Patience, Conviction, Revenge also came out from Aftershock. Haven't read issue 3 yet, so I didn't read issue 4, but definitely need to get caught up on that. Meanwhile, over at Dark Horse, we have a couple of the Black Hammer books. There's a Black Hammer Sitha Louise number 1. I don't know if that's a one-shot or if it's an ongoing, not sure. We also have Quantum Age number 5. It's also in the world of Black Hammer. At DC, we've got all those Batman books that we talked about, the Annual 3, Batman Dam 2, Batman Who Laughs number 1, Detective 994. We also have Flash 60, where Flash meets a new hero who's tapped into the Strength Force. We talked about Goddess Mode. We talked about Hawkman. House of Whispers 4 is also out. There's also the New Talent Showcase 2018 number 1 that had some pretty good stories. There's a Batman story in there that's really good. There's a Zatanna story that's pretty good. There's a great Catwoman story where kind of explores the relationship between Catwoman and Damian Wayne. And that story takes place before Batman 50, by the way. So that was that one was really good. Sideways 11, the penultimate issue of that story where things really kind of hit the fan. I'm going to be sad to see that go away, especially with the Kenneth Rocafort art. Then we've got Supergirl 25, which is a double size issue, has a good chunk of the issues, the main story with Supergirl out there searching for the truth about Rogel Czar, and also has a couple of backup stories. One in particular with art by Brad Walker that is really gorgeous to look at, of course, because it's Brad Walker art, but also was a lot of fun examining Supergirl's current Kolun companion, which, you know, Kolun, that's like Brainiac 5, the green skin, the blonde hair, which is, you know, for those not familiar, Supergirl and Brainiac 5, when Supergirl was part of Legion of Superheroes, had a relationship. It was one of the better couples in the DCU, I thought. So it's interesting to see her teamed up again with a Kolun. I think his name's Zinder Cole, I think is what it is. I also have Wonder Woman number 60 from G. Willow Wilson. Over at IDW, I wanted to read Magic the Gathering Chandra number 1. I didn't get a chance to, but that's out today as well. And then from Image, we talked about Bitterroot number 2. Also, Cemetery Beach number 4 from Warren Ellis. I've read the first couple of issues of that series. I really liked it. Need to get caught up on that and read issue 3 and issue 4. Hit Girl 11 from Mark Miller is out. Magic Order number 5 also from Mark Miller. We've got Oblivion Song from Kirkman and DeFelici number 10. Rose number 15 from Meredith Finch. Was really good. And there's a new Spawn miniseries, Spawn Kills Everyone 2, number 1 of 4. Over at Marvel, Amazing Spider-Man number 11. Avengers is also up to issue 11. Latest issue of Black Panther is out with issue number 7. We've got those other two Defenders one-shots. I talked about the Hulk and the Namor issue this last Marvel Monday. And today we have the Doctor Strange and the Silver Surfer issues to wrap up one-shots for each of the four founding members. We've also got the Fantastic Four Wedding Special out today. Another book from Marvel I'm really looking forward to reading is Miles Morales Spider-Man number 1 from Saladin Ahmed. Really looking forward to that. I've heard nothing but amazing things. There's a new Star Wars Darth Maul book, Star Wars Age of the Republic, Darth Maul number 1. And then the Uncanny X-Men weekly series continues with number 5. And then finally, I'll mention from Valiant, we've got Shadow Man number 10, which Jesse and I talked about spoiler-free impressions on last week's Valiant Sunday. So anything else that you wanted to point out, Manny, that I might have missed?
No, I think you got it all this week.
Right on. Well, hope you guys get out there to your local comic shops and pick up some books. If you only get 2, remember Batman Annual 3 and Hawkman number 7. Those are the ones that yep. That really just must check out this week for sure. So Manny and I want to thank everybody for joining us. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. We're at the site. Please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Last thing I'll mention is the 12 days of The Comic Source, which starts this Friday, December 14th. Going to be giving away a copy of Justice League number 1 from Scott Snyder. And then on Saturday, we're going to be giving away a copy of the Infinity miniseries from, I think it was 2015. And that one's signed by Jim Chung. Actually, it's issue number 1. On Sunday, we're giving away a Bloodshot Reborn Volume 1, as well as a Superman Batman Volume 1. On Monday, the 17th, a copy of Baby Teeth number 1 from Donnie Cates. Also, a copy of Ultimate Fallout number 4, which is the first appearance of Miles Morales. Now, I know that's like an $80 book. This is the second print, okay? So it's like an $8 book or a $10 book. But it is still the first appearance. And with the Spider-Verse movie out, it's probably gone up. And, you know, it's a chance to own a first appearance of Miles, even if it is a second print. So on Tuesday, we're going to give away a copy of God Loves, Man Kills, number 1, a classic X-Men graphic novel. On Wednesday, the 10th, will be a copy of The Dead Hand, and that is signed by Stephen Mooney and Kyle Higgins. On the 20th, it's The Art of the Witchblade from Top Cow. On Friday, it's going to be a trade paperback of Batman Cataclysm. That's the Batman trade paperback that collects the issues right when the big earthquake hit Gotham and eventually led into Gotham No Man's Land. On Saturday, the 22nd, we're going to be giving away a signed copy of the first volume of Letter 44. Then on Sunday, the 23rd, we're giving away a copy of Harbinger Wars Volume 1. As well as Superman, Our Worlds at War, Volume 1. On Monday, it'll be Animosity, Volume 1 from Marguerite Bennett, as well as the single issue, the first issue of Life of Captain Marvel, Number 1. That'll be the variant art germ cover. And then finally, on Christmas Day, we're going to be giving away a copy of Wolverine Origin, the miniseries, or the trade paperback that collects a miniseries by Paul Jenkins and Andy Kubert, where we finally learned the true origin of James Howlett Wolverine. So that's everything we're giving away. Now the details on how to win. So during the episodes that come out each of these days, I will be giving a secret code word. What you need to do is you need to send me a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with that secret code word. And you need to retweet the tweet that goes out that promotes the episode. So two steps. You got to retweet, and probably with hashtag 12 days of Comic Source. And you've got to send me the secret code word so that I know that you listen to the episode. So you do that, and I will draw somebody at random from all of the people that send me the code word and retweet the tweet that I send out about the episode, and then you win. Don't have to pay shipping, none of that. I'll take care of all the shipping, all that stuff. I'll contact the winner via direct message. So you're going to need to be sure that you're following The Comic Source on Twitter or Instagram. And again, retweet and send me a direct message with the code word to be entered into the drawing. You can only win once, so there's a little strategy involved. Like, do you want to do them all? and then you're not eligible later to win something you might really want, but will you have a better chance? You know, it's like, I mean, if it were me, I would just start on the first day and do everything you need to do to try to win. And if you win, you win. I don't care if you guys want to end up swapping, if people want to trade, can talk on Twitter about all that kind of stuff. Say, oh, you know, I really wanted the X-Men. I really wanted the God Loves, Man Kills. And somebody else really wanted the Dead Hand. Yeah, you guys can swap. It doesn't matter to me. That's fine. So anyway, those are the details. I will, I'll put a copy of the rules up on the website so everybody knows. And I'll talk about it again on tomorrow's episode. So that's all the details for the 12 Days of the Comic Source. Hope it's something we'll do more of in the future with more giveaways if we get a good response this time. So once again, Manny and I want to thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.